I'd like to call this meeting of the Legacy Funding Division for March 6th, which is the 176th anniversary of the Battle of the Alamo, to order. And we're going now. So, being that we do have a quorum here, let's approve the minutes of February 28th. Representative Pepin, have you gone over them? You care to move that? Minutes moved for February 28th. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are passed. Today, we have several bills that we will consider for the omnibus bill that we're doing. But before we begin, and in reference to possibilities in the omnibus bill, let me just say that, and I don't expect that we're doing these entire amounts, but in the estimated fund balance that we just received, here is the money that would be available for a supplemental budget. Clean water, $7.208 million. Parks and Trails, $930,000. Arts, History, Culture, $2.395 million. In Outdoor Heritage, we have $2.490, but we've already taken a chunk of that. So that's what we actually have available. Roughly $1.5 million. And if you were to look, it would have more in it, but that includes $800,000 that came back from Historical Society projects. And I think our intent should be to refund the money again back into the Historical Society. From whence it came, we shall return it. So, with that, Representative Torkelson. Do you care? What's the bill number? You have House File 2270, and I'll move this for you to be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that motion, and yes, I'm presenting House File 2270. I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, if you were at the Battle of the Alamo or if you've been heard of it.
No, thank you. I was not there, Representative Torkelson. I have been, however, to the Alamo, and I looked for the basement, and they wouldn't let me in.
Did you find any survivors?
None there that day.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you, sir. House File 2270 relates to park and trail funding, and is specifically to parks and trails of regional significance across the state. They currently are required to have a 25% match, and they have a $500,000 per project cap. This bill would remove both of those items. We feel that these issues are inhibiting the quality of the projects that are accepted in this program. I am going to turn to Barry Wendorf, the Parks Director at Isanti County, to further illuminate the topic.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Mr. Wendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Torkelson, Mr. Chair. My name is Barry Wendorf, Parks Director with Isanti County and the Communications Director for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. With me is Chuck Woken, Director of Stearns County Parks and Trails, as well as the Vice Chair of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. The Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition supports House File 2270, authored by Representative Torkelson, which removes the 25% local match and $500,000 per project cap on park and trail legacy grant projects. In 2009, the DNR was given direction by the legislature to complete a 25-year park and trail legacy plan. In very clear terms, in this plan, the message resulting from 17 public workshops held throughout the state during the legacy planning process was to invest in projects of the highest quality and to make sure that this new source of funding has a significant and lasting impact. In 2011, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition was awarded funding to complete a regional parks and trails study in order to better understand and direct this statewide system. As we move through this legislatively authorized planning process, it is our objective to meet the goals of the public input that was received during the 25-year plan. We are going to continue to plan a network of high-quality parks and trails that provide users with evidence of sound investments. The Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition views the match and project cap as counter to what we learned during this study, and that they present an artificial impediment for agencies to implement the 25-year legacy plan. The following are some examples of high-quality projects throughout the state that could not meet the 25% local match or that were required additional funding. In Isani County, we had the opportunity to acquire and develop a 40-acre regional park on Spectacle Lake. Spectacle Lake is in the center of Isani County, and historically, dating back to the 1950s, was the most popular place for people to go swimming in our area. The lake is spring-fed. It does not have an inlet or outlet, and we were offered the opportunity to purchase this project. It has since been privatized, the entire shoreline around the lake, with the exception of one small township swim beach, which holds up to 5 vehicles at this time. The total cost of this project would be estimated at $3 million for acquisition and development. Isani County has chosen not to apply for a legacy grant to pursue this project due to lack of local match and the cap of $500,000. Other projects include the City of Duluth. They're proposing to construct a world-class 100-mile-long single-track mountain bike trail, very similar to that of the Cuyuna State Recreation Area, except this is entirely within the city limits of Duluth. The total estimated cost of this project is $2 million. They have applied for a legacy fund previously and were awarded a grant in the amount of $250,000. They also applied for federal recreational trail grants and received funding for that as well, far short of the $2 million estimated cost. Stearns County is in the process of developing Rockville County Park, estimated total built-out cost of just under $2 million. They did receive a legacy grant award for $500,000 to help with the development of that project. With that $500,000, they're able to provide parking, some trails, restrooms, and signage. Things that cannot be done because of the $500,000 cap to fulfill that master plan would include a group picnic shelter, oak savanna and invasive species restoration, additional trails, and as well as a fishing pier. The City of East Grand Forks has a plan to further develop Lefebvre Regional Park. It's on the shorelines of the Red River and within the city limits of East Grand Forks. This project includes adding a boat ramp to the park as well as a fishing pier with an estimated cost of $1.5 million. The City of East Grand Forks has chosen not to apply for a legacy grant because of the $500,000 cap. Eliminating the 25% local match and $500,000 per project cap from projects outside of the seven county metropolitan area ensures that planners and implementing agencies will be able to provide these high quality, world class recreational opportunities throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr. Windorf. Mr. Representative Perkelson. You want Mr. Loken now, or?
No, I believe that's all the testimony we have to present.
All right, then. Questions, comments from anyone? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if I'm not mistaken, in the metropolitan area, we have a match oftentimes by different folks, and I'm wondering if we could hear from them and how they do that, if they get legacy money and it pays entirely for projects, or if they currently have a match and how that works.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. I'm guessing that there are some folks out there that want to testify as to the Metropolitan Park situation, and I haven't had a real good park discussion since May 23rd, so I'm looking forward to it.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Winkler.
Is it your discretion as chair to hear bills or not?
Yes, it is, Representative
okay.
Winkler.
Thank you.
Any other questions of these gentlemen? Otherwise, we do have others who would care to represent Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Torkelson, I know there was a lot of discussion about this issue last year, and I know that one of the outcomes was the DNR was going to establish a Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee that I thought was going to look at this issue. So I'm just kind of wondering why we're just taking this one piece out of it before we get the results of that. I guess that was for Representative Torkelson.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Pepin and committee. Really, this is, in my mind, about identifying and funding the best quality projects for this program. With the cap and with the match in place, we are actually making it impossible for some of the best regionally significant projects to qualify for the program, and that, to my mind, is exactly in opposition to the design of the program.
Other questions? All right, then. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Is it your intent to talk about Parks and Trails as a whole without particular bills being before us at any time this session?
Representative Murphy, we could discuss doing that. I had no particular plan, but I'm open to suggestions for that type of conversation. Today, we'd like to stick to this bill, which is on the doing away with the matching grant proposal.
Thank you. And I guess I have a question of the individuals at the table who support this bill.
Representative Murphy, let me just say one point. The $930,000 that's available, no, we're not going to open that up this year. That is not my intention, if that was where you're going with that.
Not exactly, but...
Continue.
If we, Representative Torkelson and friends, if we lift the cap and the match, we're in future, this is for the future too, it's not, then we're going to have many more applications. Will the best rise to the top? Or how will the best rise to the top then?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative and committee. I believe we have a mechanism in place now that selects the best projects, but the pool of projects they're able to select from is limited by this cap and match, and we would have a larger pool, and the selection process would work that much better because they'd have more projects to select from.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Windmeyer, do you agree with that?
I do.
Mr. Windorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I do agree with that. There will be, as Representative Pepin alluded to earlier, the Legacy Funding Committee as well. Not that they'll necessarily provide specific projects to be awarded grants, but they will definitely help decide which projects will help move forward. We're in the process of doing our statewide Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails study as well. In that study, we hope to develop regions throughout the state and within those regions actually prioritize projects. so they're specific to that region. So we do have means to actually bring the best projects forward, and we're developing those as we go.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I guess I don't have any more questions at this time, but I am a bit confused on how projects will be selected in the future. And what with what we have in place, and then if this is if there's no matching, well, that's
okay,
for the
thank
big
you.
Discussion rather than the little discussion.
We'll have a bigger discussion later on. Thank you, Representative Murphy. I believe Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, we've had, I'm looking at the line that said a grant amount is not subject to a maximum grant award limitation, and that means that you've testified that we can have bigger projects. And you've said that because of that, we will have more projects. But you're designing this so we have less money. So I get one part of your argument, bigger projects, more projects. But if we're going to have bigger projects and more projects, why are you providing for less money statewide? Because you're getting rid of the match.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the state dollar contribution will not be any different. I believe that as projects are brought forward, those that incorporate a match in their application will probably have a better chance of being approved. This does not eliminate the possibility of a match. It only eliminates the requirement of a match. And I haven't been around here very long, but I know as we evaluate programs and try and decide upon their validity and how much money may be funded or channeled toward a certain project program, we often take a look at how many applications have been received for that program in the past. And if we are artificially reducing the number of applications by having this cap in place, we are putting this program at a serious disadvantage.
Representative Wagenius.
The bottom line, thank you, Mr. Chair, we're having bigger projects, more projects, and less money. So it's an inconsistent argument from my point of view.
Representative Torkelson, do you want to respond? Or
thank
do
you, thank you, Mr. Chair. Neither of us know that there will be less money. We do not know that. There is not a requirement, but there is no knowledge of whether a local match will be applied or not. We do not know.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If even one of these projects doesn't have the 25% match, there will be less money. And this wouldn't be in here if there weren't some people who are going to say, hey, I don't want to do it myself. I want all money from somebody else. I don't want to put forth the effort to get the money myself. I want all the money from the state. So bottom line, we're going to have bigger projects, more projects. I get that. But less money, I don't.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I was going to return to a topic that Representative Green was going to cover, so I'm going to let her go ahead.
Representative Green.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler. And really, I'm going to return to a topic that Representative Pepin raised, which is that I'm just wondering if you could enunciate why we're not waiting till the November 15th report comes out.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. This is an issue that we've identified as being important at this time, and we bring it forward because we believe in its validity.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I do observe at the legislature is that we're trying to make dollars go farther by seeking matching funds in myriad ways, not just here on the Legacy Fund. And I feel as though by stepping away from that, we're stepping away from kind of best practices in terms of making our dollars work harder, but also looking for local buy-in. And you know, I realize that those are kind of arguments against the bill, but really I just want to say, what about this report? We've tasked a committee of experts to come up with something. You know, I realize this is important. We had this conversation last year.
Seem to remember it.
Yes, exactly.
Representative Torkelson, anything more?
Not really. Just we're not stopping the process of this committee that's going to evaluate the program, and if they come back recommending a match, I suppose it could be reapplied.
Any other comments? Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe, Mr. Chair, this is for you or Representative Torkelson. You mentioned May 23rd as being the last time we talked about this bill, but of course that's not the case.
It's the one that I remember.
I don't know if you remember the month of July, 2011.
I just have,
stands out for a lot of people. But
I have deeper memories of May 23rd.
There was a lot of conversation that day, Mr. Chair. but I don't remember when this when we came up with this idea of a report and who's doing it and why we decided to do it and what we might be missing if we take action before it comes out. But could you remind us of the history?
Well, yes, Representative Winkler. This, as we have made allusion to several times here today, there was considerable discussion about the Parks and Trails portion of our bill last spring, and in putting together the bill, which we considered May 23rd, and then passed pretty much intact in July. Part of the compromise, if you will, part of the agreement, when we did the new parks percentage, was to establish this committee to study how this is being done in Greater Minnesota, and it was again part of the compromise, part of the agreement, to reach some conclusion, some satisfaction after the percentages were divided up.
Mr. Chair, and then to Representative Torkelson, what I thought we had probably done. And I remember there were a number of other elements that we put together into this compromise, and there were obviously very strong differences of opinion, Representative Torkelson, about how this money should be divided. And I remember the same way that Representative Erdahl does, that this report was part of the compromise and that we would actually want to get information and study this issue. And I feel like your bill is essentially disregarding that compromise, disregarding that deal. And I wonder if you could tell us why we should see this otherwise. It seems to me you're not sticking to the agreement. It might not have been your preferred agreement. It certainly wasn't mine. But tell us why we're not ignoring that deal.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just reiterate what I said earlier, that by limiting the number of projects that make application to the program, you are putting the program at a disadvantage. As you know, when we evaluate programs, we look at the number of applicants we've had for these programs in the past. The argument or the proposal behind this is that these be projects of regional significance. And it seems to me that projects of regional significance would have larger price tags. And if we're eliminating those projects with larger price tags, we're putting this program at a disadvantage because those applications are not being brought forward.
Why do I suddenly feel like it's Groundhog's Day or I'm having a bad dream?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to remind you again that
Representative Winkler,
that you do have the discretion of whether or not to bring these bills forward.
Well, that's true, Representative Winkler, but I tell you,
you're the groundhog.
Yes. You will find that what I'm trying to do is to be open and fair. I will allow nearly every bill that's introduced to come before us. There are a couple of other bills coming up in the near future that I might not have a lot of agreement with, but we will extend to members the courtesy of hearing their bills.
Very well. Well, Representative Torkelson, I understand that you don't like the way the program works right now, and I'm sure you don't like the percentages, I don't even know if it was a percentage or if it was just the appropriation amounts. There are a lot of things I'm sure you don't like about the way this compromise came about. There's a lot of things I don't like about it. I could make the argument that if we're going to require a local match, it should be the same that the Metro Parks bring to the table, which is 90%. 90% of the operating dollars come from our property taxpayers. 10% comes from the state of the Metro Parks. So we could put that kind of limitation in place, and that, I could argue that that's fair, but that's not what we agreed to. That's not part of the package that was put together when we passed the bill last year. So I just have a real question about why we are bringing legislation and not honoring the deal. And your comment back didn't really reassure me that we are honoring the deal with this bill. So explain to me how we are honoring the agreement last summer by bringing forward this bill today.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my clock did not say May 23rd or July, whatever, this morning when I woke up, but here we are in 2012. In my mind, this is all about an attempt to actually level the playing field, and there are a variety of discrepancies in park funding that we discussed at ad nauseum last year. I'm not going to bring all those issues forward at this time, and you know, take this bill at its face value. It is what it is. It's a simple bill, and I'm bringing it forward because I think it's a valid proposal.
Representative Winkler?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, you wouldn't in any way feel like we were dishonoring the agreement if bills started to come forward to change the percentages for what greater Minnesota parks would be receiving?
Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I would guess that my desire to change percentages would not be any less than yours. And I did not bring forward a bill that changes any percentage.
Representative Winkler?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I'm not saying that you did. I'm saying that there was an agreement. The report was part of the agreement, and you want to change the program before we get to the report. I think you're breaking the agreement.
Mr. Loken.
Mr. Chair, Chuck Wilkins, Stearns County Park Director and Vice Chair for the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition. Regarding leveling the playing field, I think our Metro colleagues can probably clarify this better than we, but our understanding is that on legacy funds, that there is no cap of $500,000 on legacy fund projects to the Metro implementing agencies. 100% of the maintenance and operation of projects that are funded through the legacy to Greater Minnesota by state agreement require that the implementing agency in Greater Minnesota must take care of all of the maintenance and operations for those particular units. We also don't think that there is a the match requirement, and secondly the $500,000 cap to legacy projects that are capital acquisition, restoration, development in the metro area. But our colleagues from the metro can clarify that for us.
Are you ready to segue into our colleagues from the metro area?
Could I ask one question first?
Representative Wagenius.
As we talk about this $500,000, is my recollection correct that this recommendation came from the DNR? And if so, perhaps we should ask DNR what the basis of that recommendation was.
Representative Wagenius, which recommendation?
$500,000. If that, my recollection may be wrong, but if my recollection is correct, then perhaps we should hear from DNR.
Do we have any DNR? Come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ron Potter with the Division of Parks and Trails. Yes, we did set the limit at 500. We have some other grant programs that we run. The one that they mentioned for Duluth, the federal program, the FRTP, that has a 150,000 limit. Most of our other programs are a 100,000 limit, but because this program had more money available, we did set the limit higher at 500,000.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, excuse me. Was the 500,000 set for that round only, or was that set for all time?
Mr. Potter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that was set for all of them. That wasn't just for that round. That's been what the limit was since we started that legacy grant program.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. I'd like to bring up Mike Hamm, St. Paul Parks. Welcome. Identify yourself for the tape, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Mike Hamm. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of St. Paul. With me is Bull Carlson with the Three Rivers Park District. Our testimony today is on behalf of the 10 implementing agencies of the Metropolitan Park System. A lot of the ground that we intend to cover has already been covered, so we'll try to be as efficient as possible in getting through it. Some colleagues from the Metropolitan System that are here today are Jane Miller, the Superintendent of the Minneapolis Park Board, and John Vondelinde, the Director of Anoka County Parks and Recreation. We offer testimony against this bill, and we'll offer brief comments as to why we oppose the bill related to both policy and to process. First, related to policy, as the Chairman and others had alluded to, in the 2011 session, the Parks and Trails portion of the legacy funding was very contentious, to say the least. The bill that resulted from the special session was not passed out of both bodies at the end of the session. The bill before this committee takes one aspect of that contentious topic, absent all the related considerations, all the related context, excuse me, for separate consideration. We maintain that the best policy for the Parks and Trails Fund will consider all of the various elements as one package rather than addressing them independently. Specifically, we believe that the match requirement is a very important mechanism to make sure that the highest caliber projects of statewide and regional significance are funded. Without a local match for this program, there is arguably no restrictor preventing applicants from proposing a project at any scale. The state park system and the metropolitan regional park system have strict definition in both a process and a criteria for inclusion. The metro system has criteria around minimum acreage. We tabulate and have requirements for visitation and visitation from outside of our direct service area, and requirements that those proposals be natural resource based. All of the projects funded from this source within the regional park system are locally vetted through our local policy boards and are ultimately adopted by the Met Council in terms of review. The Greater Minnesota Regional Park grants being funded are not part of a similarly defined system, and the match requirement provides an important mechanism via local investment for vetting those projects. Related to process, as an outcome of the 2011 session, the DNR was tasked to establish the working group, which was alluded to develop consensus funding recommendations. Related, the DNR has also convened a Parks and Trails Advisory Committee. We have been asked to come to that table and participate along with the DNR and outstate agency representatives. That process only has recently begun. We maintain that the best policy for the Parks and Trails Fund should be to have the opportunity to be informed by those processes, specifically the funding recommendations that were referenced, which are due no later than November 15th of this year. To consider this bill at this time is out of sequence with what we consider key outputs of the 2011 session. I'll now ask Mr. Carlson to testify.
Mr. Carlson.
Please, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Bo Carlson, Associate Superintendent with Three Rivers Park District. And one of the points of contention that came up last year is how do we have a system of measurement where we can look at the metropolitan regional system and compare that to Greater Minnesota? And one of the elements in addition to the working group that was looking at those funding formulas for the three different agencies, the DNR, the Metro Regional Park System, and Greater Minnesota, was $175,000 that was established to go to the Greater Minnesota Park System to develop a study that could begin to gather some of that information that we would have an apples-to-apples comparison. And the three components of that study were this. One was to establish protocols to determine the origin of visitors. Where are people coming from? Who's visiting the Greater Minnesota Park System? One of the concerns we had and one of the concerns the legislature brought forward is we don't know what this system looks like. And we don't know where people are coming from that are recreating within these Greater Minnesota regional parks. Second was to collect and compile details on the facilities within Greater Minnesota. We didn't know what established regional parks within Greater Minnesota. Where do we have state parks that are already serving a community? Where do we have regional parks or areas that are underserved? And then third, develop some evaluation protocol and criteria to determine the priorities for park and trail acquisition and development so we can start to target where this funding would be best spent, where we can look at those areas where we have underserved communities. One of the elements of this is that we don't have a good understanding of what our needs are in Greater Minnesota. We don't have an understanding of what the development needs are, what the new park needs may be. By eliminating this cap, we're not even looking at what potentially we may need to spend in Greater Minnesota. And unfortunately, we may spend unwisely till we get to the point of having this information back. I think the position of the Metro Regional Park System has been simply that. Let's wait until we have a better evaluation tool. Let's wait until we have the information. And then let's look at the recommendations of the working group to try to establish what those funding percentages may be. If you will, Mr. Chair, I'd like just to take a moment, too, to answer Representative McNamara's questions regarding what the Metro Regional Park System brings to the table as far as match requirements within the various funding streams. And there's actually three different sources of funding that the Metro Regional Park System receives. The first is operations and maintenance funding, and we get some small percentage of general fund dollars that goes to our agencies. About 10% of that is provided for our system as a whole that comes from the state general fund that goes out to the agencies. The remaining 90%, and that's about $80 million, is provided by local taxes and by user fees that we charge to our users that come out to our park system. All of the information that we provide to the legislature to identify what we're spending on a local basis is something we have to provide and that is audited annually to see how those dollars are being spent. Secondarily, traditionally, we've received some dollars through the bonding bill, and those dollars are matched by the Metropolitan Council, and that ratio is for every $3 of state money, $2 is provided by the Met Council, and then that's distributed to the agencies itself. And then finally, in the legacy account, and if you recall, the legacy dollars we're talking about, the appropriation that's made to the Metro Regional Park System goes directly to the regional agencies through the Met Council. It's a distribution process. We identify to the legislature what those projects are. We bring our project list forward and say, this is what you are going to get with the funding that would be provided for the regional system. We identify those outcomes. If you'll remember, the money that goes to Greater Minnesota goes through a grants program. The decisions that are being made on where the funding and where the dollars are being spent, where that investment is going in Greater Minnesota, is being made by the DNR. It's not being made by the legislature and the legislative members. Within the legacy program, there isn't a requirement that we match those dollars through the Metropolitan Council. We actually take 10% of the legacy money and we put that in an acquisition pot for acquisitions within the regional system, and that money is actually matched. And in fact, when we get down to the point of acquisitions, it turns out about 60% of the money comes from either the Metropolitan Council or the local agency to match those dollars going forward with an acquisition. So hopefully that provides a little more information and answers the question Representative McNamara brought up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Other questions or comments? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, if a 25% match is a bad idea in Greater Minnesota, should we allow all the acquisitions in the metro area to go forward without a match as well?
Representative Torkelson.
I have not tried to evaluate that. I would be happy to take a look at it and give you my opinion at a later time. There's no doubt that the Metro Park System is well-developed, well-entrenched, and receives state funding from a variety of state resources. That's where they are. The Greater Minnesota System is not at that point. It's my belief that the legacy dollars were put in place to develop new programs and new ideas and things that haven't been traditionally funded. And that's why an emphasis on the greater Minnesota parks is absolutely appropriate.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I just don't see, I'm wondering if you can identify a difference. Why should greater Minnesota regional parks not have a match and metro parks have a 60% match? It might not be a requirement, but that's the way the numbers work out.
Representative Torkelson.
Exactly. It's not a requirement. And part of the reason numbers work out that way is because of this entrenched, well-funded system that receives state dollars from a variety of sources. By the way, the testifier did leave out the lottery and loot program. It also helps to fund metro parks.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, as soon as you develop a regional system of parks with 90% local funding, you'd have a better argument that we should be offering state money for free without a local match. But so far, what you're talking about is a system that's being not developed, but you'd like it to be completely developed with state funds. And that isn't how the metro system was created. They actually had to have a commitment locally first. And even now, after it's fully developed, it still is providing 60% of a local match for these new acquisitions. It isn't being treated the same way.
Thank you. Anyone else who wishes to testify? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Chair Udall. I appreciate what Representative Winkler had to say, and this 25%, I guess my concern is how do you know if you don't have a matching percentage, how do you know if the projects are legitimate? Because my understanding is the money for the parks are supposed to be of regional or statewide significance. So to me that at least requires some proof, I guess, that it's a good project, significant project. And I'm wondering what would be the criteria then, or how would we know that we're being good stewards of the dollars if we didn't have some matching requirement? Are you thinking, well, obviously, I don't know, is there any other level other than 25% that you might consider? Because to me it seems like there should be at least be some match requirement to show that there's legitimacy for the project.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Pepin. I am not familiar with the details of the application process involved with this grant program, but I would assume that the application process would certainly evaluate the validity of each individual project that they might fund. And the match is just one ingredient in that. There's lots of other ingredients. The match does not guarantee that it's a good project, necessarily. And frankly, there is not the property tax base in greater Minnesota that allows for as large a pot of money to depend on to make these matches.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson. I guess my concern isn't that it's a good project. It's more has to do with that it's a significant regional or statewide project. And it seems like if there were some more hook in it, we could have more assurance that that was the case. Because there are a lot of projects that are good ideas, but I don't know that they rise to the level of what was intended to be covered by the legacy amendment. And so I'm just looking to see if there's some criteria, which is why I think this report would be helpful. So at this time I don't support this language.
Thank you. Okay. Well, at this point then, if there's no other eager testifier, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And at this point, then, I will present a bill that I have today. I'm anticipating this should take, since it's the chair's bill, about 5 minutes. And then, being that this meeting is being televised today, and I'm sure many people are out there looking forward to seeing Representative Rukavina. So we'll get this done quickly, and then Representative Rukavina will present his bill. Representative Keel.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, when you're ready.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, House File 2530, will also lay over for possible inclusion, probable inclusion. And what this deals with, basically, we've been talking a lot about rules this year, and what this bill does is that it has actually two facets. One is to look back at historical rulemaking in Minnesota and follow past rules back. And $35,000 is being appropriated from legacy funding to deal with the history portion. I also think it's important, because I think someday we are going to do rules again in Minnesota, contrary to some legislation, that when we go forward with rules, it's important that we track them easily in a transparent manner. I think that one of the things that, I've run into that is somewhat disheartening is that we are, in the interim, people come up and talk to us about what did you do, this horrible law you passed, and we really didn't do it. It was rules, which ultimately, of course, the legislature does bear responsibility for. But I think that there needs to be, a better, more transparent system going forward for people to track what's happening with rulemaking in Minnesota. And going forward, the department, LLC, can, or LCC, can take care of the funding for this, for their carry forward into the future. I'm just looking at the past money, the $35,000 for the history. I have a testifier with me.
Would you please identify yourself for that?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, I'm Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes for the state of Minnesota. And I think, as members, you're all well aware of the bill status system that's on the legislature's website and was programmed some time ago by the reviser's office to be allow members, the public, everyone interested to track the progress of a bill. Well, for many years, the reviser's office has had an idea that it would really be good to have a similar type of website for administrative rules. And last summer and fall, we really started seriously brainstorming about this and thinking, well, okay, we already have an internal website to track the progress of administrative rules, because the reviser's office plays a very similar role with respect to administrative rulemaking as we play with respect to bills. All the administrative rules must be prepared, drafted, approved as to form before they are put into the administrative rulemaking process. And so, and then similarly, once they are duly adopted, the reviser's office publishes them in book form and on the internet, much as we do with the session laws that you pass and the resulting statutes. So we already have an internal system to track when did we get a rule file from an agency, when was it published in the state register? Was there a statement, or what was the statement of need and reasonableness that was correlated with that rule? We have much of that information already in our system. So what if we took our internal system and beefed it up, made it a public website, and then scanned some of these older documents, the old statements of need and reasonableness, older versions of state registers that showed when rules were actually adopted. Also, we could scan some of the older reviser documents that were used back in the 1980s to prepare rules. link those, put it on a website that would correlate all these documents with a particular rule file. And then what we could also do is do programming for the future using funds already available to us through the carry forward funding to be able to provide a searchable format for those documents going into the future. So we actually prepared a legacy grant proposal under the history projects and digital conversion categories, did present it last December to the at the History Center. That was not one of the projects selected for funding at that time. However, in discussions with Representative Erdahl, we felt that it was something that Representative Erdahl felt was worthy of bringing forward to you.
Mr. Chair?
Anyone have any questions?
Any questions at all?
Then we could just lay it over.
Okay. No other testifiers? Okay.
No other.
All right. Then we'll move to lay this over for probable inclusion, did you say?
Probable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Rucamina.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, I have an amendment that I believe is in the packet. So
okay.
To get the bill in the order, I would like it if somebody would like to move the bill first and then offer the amendment.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will move the bill and also move the amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author desires.
Those in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill then is in the proper order for the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Pleasure to be here, Representative Erdahl. I haven't been in front of your committee before. What the bill does, and it deals with an issue that we've that's got quite a bit of contention the last couple of years around here. School trust land, and if I can, you can see what the bill does. There's, and I believe also, members, that you have a nice colored map that got handed out that shows you the Bass Lake, which is up in the northeast corner of, right above the Lake Vermilion State Park, and also a number of different areas where there's school trust land on Lake Vermilion. And just let me give you a little background. When I first came here in 1987, there was the issue of leased cabins on Lakeshore on school trust land. And there were first some auctions that happened, and then some people lost their cabins in the auction process, and then others were afraid to come forward and go into the auction process. So in 1998, in a couple of different bills, I had a land exchange, which is a legal thing to do, one of the ways to get rid of, to dispose of school trust land that are in an exchange. And what happened is the DNR insisted, and I believe a lot of the environmental community, that Lakeshore land should be exchanged for Lakeshore property. So that was what they insisted, and I said, fine with me. I just wanted to get the issue off of our backs up in northern Minnesota, because we were being approached by a lot of our constituents. But I did ask the question on the House floor in 1998 how this Lakeshore property, if we did this exchange, was going to generate money for the school trust. And I said, it probably won't. And I said a decade from now, I'll ask that question just to see what the answer is, because I know what the answer was going to be. Well, I'm a few years late now. I think it's been about 13 years or so, and we've got all this school trust land on Lake Vermilion as a result of that exchange, and it's not generating any money. So what the bill does then is it has the legacy fund buy the land, and with the amendment, it turns that land and it buys it to the nearest buildable lot. So it's just the lake shore we're talking about, because I'm hoping that, you know, forestry and timber sales can be generated off of the rest of it. But it buys it back to the buildable lot. That's the way the revisers advised me to do it. And the lake shore would become now part of Vermilion State Park. And, you know, I figured if 7,000 feet of shoreline on Vermilion was a great idea for a new state park, that, you know, several miles would be 22, I've been told, but I don't have the exact number, would be a great idea. Magnificent, in fact. So, members, that's basically the bill. I know that the Representative McFarland has been dealing with this issue. Representative Dietrich has, Representative McNamara. I understand, Representative McNamara, that Representative Dill tried to imitate me in committee this morning. Is that true? I don't know how, if he did a good imitation or not. But, you know, it really is an important issue. And I have been on the LCCMR for now, I think, 6 years. And I was on it previously, a decade before that. And the DNR is always coming in asking for to buy new land. And I think as a trustee, that for the school trust, as the current trustee, that this should have been a priority for them for years. And members, and Representative McNamara, you were on Ways and Means with me. I did ask this question, why we weren't doing an exchange with U.S. Steel when that whole park was proposed, if you recall that. I did ask that in committee, because I thought any good trustee would want to give $16 or $18 million or whatever was paid to U.S. Steel to the school kids and do an exchange with them instead. So, members, that's the bill, and I stand for any questions. Finally, on the amendment, too, it wouldn't allow the DNR to do a chargeback for the exchange.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Now, so that I understand this, you're proposing to use the Outdoor Heritage Fund to purchase riparian land, school trust land, adjoining Vermilion.
It's actually, if you look at the map, Mr. Chair, it's spread out all over. I wish the DNR were here to explain this to me, because I've asked Mr. Myers when I first got the map what all the different colored school trust lands meant. Now, I think the pink school trust is the original 16 and 36 sections, although I know the land around Bass Lake was exchanged in that 1998 legislation that got finalized in 2001. But there are all these blue colors and dark, light blue and dark blue and swamp land that is all school trust land. And so I don't know how the DNR puts what into what category, but I believe if you look at the map, you will see all kinds of school trust land on the shoreline of this lake all over. And it's not generating any money, and it hasn't since the DNR asked for this exchange to be done in this way. And I think they have an obligation to the trust to do that. With the legislation that's being moved around here, my fear is that, you know, this land could be put up for auction, and you'll have 20 miles or whatever it is of development. And I want to hold it in public trust for the people to be able to fish off of and throw a line out and pick blueberries and park their boat and do whatever else they want to do, skinny dip, whatever.
Representative Rukavina, I'm sure that they don't skinny dip in northern Minnesota.
It's too cold.
It's too cold. This is kind of a timely bill to come up, because earlier today in state government operations, we had Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Dietrich present their bill, which dealt with school trust lands by creating a commission to replace the current process of dealing with the school trust lands. So just wonder what you would think of that. A commission replacing the current, I don't know if it's an advisory task force or what it's called.
Mr. Chair, all I know is after 26 years, I've been trying to point out to the legislature, and I think some of the senior members on this committee, particularly Representative Wagenius and Representative Murphy, know that I have been in our caucus and on the floor of the House and everywhere else I could trying to explain to people that, you know, the school kids, I thought, were getting a raw deal. How you determine in the end what that commission or trustee is going to look like, I don't know the answer to that, but I know that after 26 years of me complaining to the Department of Natural Resources that unless you really kind of jack them up a little bit with legislation, this issue isn't going to be addressed. I've been, you know, questioning the timber sales and the capturing of most all of the money they make off of timber sales back into their coffers. I've been asking about school trust land that was in state parks and in old growth forests and in scientific and natural areas for years, how it was generating any money, and it wasn't. And to the DNR's credit, when Marty Vadas was in the land department, they were trying to get some of those lands out and doing some exchanges, etc. But, you know, meanwhile, they were constantly buying in the bonding bill and at the LCCMR and now at the legacy fund buying new land, and yet we've got this issue that should have been addressed a long time ago, and that's what I'm trying to accomplish with this bill.
Questions of Representative Rukavina or comments? Representative Wagenius?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish you hadn't mentioned my name, then I wouldn't have had to talk. But one of the opportunities that we have had is to charge, and I think we've had an obligation to pay for the hunting and fishing use of all these school trust lands. And I'd certainly propose that. And I don't, we could certainly have that money going into the school trust because that is what would be generated off of many of these lands. Some of them are not good for logging, but we could certainly charge for hunting and fishing. But that's gone nowhere because everybody has this group they want to protect. And so I don't think they're easy solutions to this thing that we hold up and say is so sacred, which is the trust fund, but probably the easiest opportunity we have is to put some charge for hunting and fishing and put that money into the school trust. And I think we're obligated to do it, actually, and we haven't done it.
Well,
I learned this morning we have 2.5 million acres of school trust land, and 1 million of it is peat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 500,000 acres are rough forest vegetation, and then about 1 million acres of good forest land.
Huntable.
So that's my little history lesson of what I learned this morning. Well, other questions? Are you going to respond, Representative Rukavina?
Just a response. I don't necessarily disagree with Representative Wagenius, but I think the fairest way to do that and would have been to do that over the years would have been to figure out what percentage of land is hunted on that school trust land and take that percentage from the current license fees. But aside from that, Representative Wagenius, I think this Lake Vermilion deal was that a trustee that would have done what the DNR did when they were buying 7,000 on your map. If you want to look, it's that big amount of land right here in Lakeshore. When they were buying that amount, when they knew they had all this other school trust land that was not generating a penny into the school trust, any good trustee would have said, and they would have approached U.S. Steel, which I'm sure would have been willing to take a deal on land of equal value for land of equal value. They insisted on that a decade and a few years before when we did the land exchange with the counties. Why wouldn't they have insisted on that? And Representative Wagenius, to me, that would have been an easy $18 million right now into the school trust. And you and the, many of the Democrats and Republicans were falling over each other to give former Governor Pawlenty his state park on Vermilion. And I was saying, fine, do it this way. Do an exchange. Put that money into the trust. U.S. Steel's got enough money. I'm sure they would have not minded getting a little more, you know, getting a different piece of land for a piece of land that they owned. And that was, that's why I want to do this, because I think of all the examples that we have of the DNR not managing that trust fund properly, the Sedan, or excuse me, the Lake Vermilion State Park, and this map right in front of you is the most egregious example of a trustee not thinking about the trust they're supposed to protect.
Representative Rukavina, as I recall, when that Lake Vermilion Park was being proposed, you were a big backer of Greenleaf Lake State Park.
I always have been a big backer of that.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Again, we always approach these things differently, and I'm glad to hear that you and I agree that we should be figuring out what percentage of this land, and it isn't all huntable land, obviously. A lot of it is swamp and peat.
You can shoot a lot of things in a swamp.
Hmm?
Thank you, Representative.
But the part that is huntable and is used for hunting, we should be reimbursing the trust fund for that use. It isn't the all of it, but it is a portion of it. And I think it is appropriate to take it from the licenses. But I actually proposed all this, and people ran for cover. You're not running for cover here, but I've never seen folks run for cover so fast in my life.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank you for bringing this forward, because I think this really gets the discussion going more about school trust lands in general. I'm surprised the DNR isn't here to make any response.
I'm shocked.
Disappointed. But the other thing is, and it really doesn't relate to this, but we were talking about school trust lands earlier today in government operations. You have mentioned before the percentage of money that comes from mining or taconite versus timber. Could you let people know that?
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, at one time it was about 82 to 83%, I think, with the last few years with MINTAC mining on school trust land. This year I know $29 million of royalties is going in to the permanent school fund and about $11.9 million into the permanent university fund. I think the figure is maybe up to 84-85%. It's from either iron ore or taconite royalties. And the university has a really good printout on their permanent university fund, which is about a similar figure, and how in real dollars you would think, being that, as everyone says, mining isn't sustainable. I know there's a few of my constituents from up north that say that, that the university pointed out that 100 years ago they were getting less in iron ore royalties than they are today in actual real dollars. So that figure could be a lot bigger. And one of the things, Representative McFarland, that I've talked to you about is this proposed exchange, which I know you had a bill up, I think, today on it. And, you know, when I was doing this land exchange back in 1998, the DNR and the environmental community insisted that land was more valuable than money and that we had to exchange land for land. And now, starting after we wrote a letter to Commissioner Landwehr over the Boundary Waters fire, that exchange has started up again. And all of a sudden, because I think there's environmental groups involved that really don't want to see mining or logging at all, it's gone to money is better than land. Well, here's the exchange, members. It's a report done in 2003 when the DNR insisted on this exchange, and the 14 forested counties, I think, 11 of them had these leased lakeshore lots, and the DNR made, you like this one, Representative McFarland, the county tax forfeit, county land department exchanged 6,553 acres for 522 acres. But now they want to do the exact opposite thing a little over a decade later. and I know it's because of pressure from environmental groups. And hey, I've got no problem. I've always challenged anybody, including my good friend Representative Wagenius, that I've got the smallest carbon footprint, and not just because of my size. But I live a very simple life in out in the woods, as Representative Dill knows, and I try to be a good environmentalist. But when you have environmental groups confusing what the school trust is all about and the DNR getting involved in that confusion, I think this whole issue of the trustee has to be looked at better.
Representative Dill wants to know if there's a Spunky too.
The Spunky's memory is, I've got buttons yet from the Spunky story, Mr. Chair, but I'm sure with the way that Representative Dill is trying to get the Timberwolf on the hunting and trapping thing, that we'll have some more Spunky stories this session.
I'll say, Representative Rukavina, from this morning, that Commissioner Landwehr testified, and one of the things that he talked about, you can maybe... Representative McFarland, correct me if my memory is wrong, that the DNR would, at the present time, when they're going to sell lakeshore property, has to ask permission, and they would rather not do that anymore. So I wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
That's on all riparian land, not just school trust land.
Right.
That they have to ask permission.
All riparian land.
Yes. And I don't really have an opinion on that, but I do have a very strong opinion on this whole school trust issue because I've watched it, monitored it, questioned it now for 26 years this year. It's the 26th year that I've been asking about this issue, and I finally convinced people on both sides of the aisle from the metro area to take a look at it with me.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, my question probably for Representative Rukavina, but possibly for Representative Dill. Representative Rukavina, there's a small island, it looks like, just off the coast of... The tribal land towards the city of Tower that looks like it still is in school trust. It looks like the dot's kind of pink there. Are you familiar with that island? And I'm just curious, how valuable would that be? Does that have the potential to be served by electricity if that was to be developed? Or what could an island like that potentially be sold for? Is either one of you familiar
Mr.
with that
Chair,
island?
Are you, Representative McMahon, are you talking about in Pike Bay here?
Representative Rukavina.
It would be in Pike Bay there. It's just off the tip of the, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, it would be just off the tip of the tribal land, it looks like, going towards the town of Tower.
I can answer that.
Representative Rukavina.
Are you tossing me a softball for a reason here, or what?
Representative Rukavina, I have not talked to you about this. You know that. I'm not tossing you a softball, but I'm looking at it and saying that island is close or to the metro than where I go to on Lake Vermilion. And I'm assuming that this island is quite valuable, and if you construe that to be a softball, I want to know what opportunity are we missing here.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and members, I want to tell you another very, you know, egregious move by the DNR. That island is called Whiskey Island.
Oh, no.
I don't know why it's called Whiskey Island, but it is. And it just so happened, but it is. And it just so happened that that is a little piece of school trust land on Whiskey Island that the Boysport Band asked to buy in the early 2000s. And then Gene Miriam, who I believe sits on the school trust advisory board, was the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, the first commissioner under Governor Pawlenty. Gene Miriam told the Boysport Band that they had to find lakeshore. Poor Lakeshore. This is 2003 or so now, 2002 maybe, or 3, I think 2003. And what happened is I got a copy of the letter that Commissioner Miriam sent to the to Gary Donald, I believe. Representative Dill was the chair then. And because 2 months later, the commissioner supported a bill on the land exchange in the Boundary Waters that said you could exchange all that lakeshore in the Boundary Waters for money. But 2 months before, he supported a bill that Senator Laurie then had and Representative Huntley, I believe it was. But 2 months earlier, there is a letter on record where Boysport Band of the Chippewa Tribe was told to get that little pink dot there, they had to find lakeshore property of equal value. And that, members, is what I'm trying to say with this bill. It's all over the board, all around. I don't know what that piece is worth, Representative McNamara. I know that the Boys Sport Band tried to buy it at one time. Maybe it's in the process. I don't know now, but on my current map, it's showing it as school trust land, and that is an actual story of what happened with that little island back in 2003, I believe it was.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, do you remember at all? One, I'm curious. I can't really tell from the dot and the scale here. How big of an island is it? And do you or Representative Deal have any idea? I'm serious. I'm just kind of curious. What it looks to me like an island that would be very valuable. I was thinking of it because of its proximity to town. You mentioned it because of the proximity to the successful Indian casino.
I think it had some historical value, Mr. Chair, for the Boys Sport Band. And it had some historical value, as I said, so that's why they were trying to get it. It's not a very big island. It's, I would say, under 40 acres, or maybe close to 40 acres. And the whole island, by the way, is not school trust. There's a 40 line in there. I think the top of it isn't. But, you know, there are other parts of it, too. If you look up in the northwestern part of the lake, you'll see a little pink end on one of the islands way up in the northwest corner and a few other little islands that have just a little bit of school trust land on them. That probably the rest of the islands are privately owned. And they named that Whiskey Island, by the way, after Representative Dill, I think.
Representative Dill, are you going to stand for that assertion?
I think it got its name because you could. It's big enough to drink whiskey on. But I wonder, Representative Rukavina, why hasn't the department, as a trustee, leased these lands out for cabins? That would seem to me to be a generating income type situation.
The last time it was such a headache. Somebody somewhere, there were lawsuits allegedly by a former assistant commissioner at the DNR who got his neighbor to sue on behalf of his school child that there weren't enough revenues coming in, when in fact, by the time we got it addressed, people on a lease from the DNR on school trust land were paying more than their neighbor was paying in actual real estate taxes, and none of the money was going in the trust fund because it was going into that forest suspense account, and everything was being charged off. And so what was the issue? None of it was going in anyway. That's where I found out, Mr. Chair members, when this whole thing started, and that's where I found out, by the way, that this timber issue isn't a recent issue, that from 1980 to 1991, there was $3-5 million a year of timber being sold off school trust land, and zero for 11 years, zero went in the trust fund until I started raising so much heck that they started building it up, and I think they got, Representative McFarland, you're a little more schooled in this than me recently, but I think they almost got up to 40% of the money going in the trust and 60% being kept for their fees, and now they're back down to almost zero again.
Okay, Chair.
Representative Dill.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that making money is not always easy, and sometimes it involves lawsuits, but, I mean, it seems to me that the legislature itself is one of the biggest impediments to making any progress on the school trust land issue, and I want to draw your attention to up in the right-hand corner of the map where it says Northeast St. Louis. If you look at that map, you'll see an island in the middle of what is Trout Lake, and it's pink. It's an incredible, incredible piece of property. It's over the top. It's phenomenal. It's at the rankings of the Lake Vermilion and Tower Sudan State Park type of thing, except that those hash marks on the map, that's in the boundary waters. And you say, well, the boundary waters, that isn't accessible. But that lake, by members, has a motorized portage where you can take your boat across the trailer on a trailer, and you can use in that lake a 25-horse motor. Is that right, Representative Rukavina? Yeah. And so I had proposed a bill and brought it up as an amendment on the House floor that we lease that pink land and build a resort on it. I mean, that would be a fine use of that. It's a motorized lake, even though it's... And I was crucified on the House floor. or even thinking of something like that. So, I mean, the legislature itself is the is one of the biggest impediments to actually making any progress on this issue. And I still think it should be leased. What a place to have a wilderness resort. So, I mean, there is just, this has just got to, somehow we have to get our arms around this and make some progress.
Representative McNamara, since the request is coming from the Lessard-Sams Committee upon which you serve, do you have any comments relating to the reception that it might receive there?
Mr. Chair, in regards to the fact that Representative Rukavina's bill requested it be funded by the Lessard-Sams money?
Yes.
I don't believe the members of Lessard-Sams as a group would necessarily think this is a great idea. It might get a somewhat colder reception there.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, does not the legislature have the final say in any bills that expend money that come to the House floor?
Representative Rukavina, yes, the legislature does. I was just trying to get a little sense of what Representative McNamara thought.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
You didn't ask me what I thought. You asked
what
Lessard's answer.
You're right. Yes. Yeah. What I thought Representative McNamara thought about what Lessard-Sams would think.
That might be what I answered.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Okay. But it wasn't what Representative McNamara thinks.
No, let's get that
and
straight for the record.
And Representative McNamara's not going to put that on the record.
Right. All right, further comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, before we break up, thank you for the hearing.
Representative Rukavina.
It was very informative. And just as a last request, would Representative McNamara point out where his hunting shack is on the map? My friends want to know.
Well,
he raises their deer idea.
To that point, Mr. Chair, unfortunately, Representative Rukavina, I had to go over and ask Representative Dill where it was because this map is not of a scale that I could interpret where it is, so I'm not positive where it is on the map, Representative Rukavina, honestly. Maybe you know. It's over on the far right. I know that it's in yeah. near one of those bays.
For the record, Representative McNamara is not on the far right.
We also know that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Renew
my motion or the bill as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Dill. The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Any other announcements, comments by anyone? Then, King, this case is closed.